Hello and welcome to The Stooshy, the politics podcast from DC Thompson Media. Well, we are less than 2 weeks to go until the Scottish Parliament elections and everything is starting to get a bit exciting. A bit exciting. But certainly here at DC Thompson Towers, things are a little bit manic as we career headlong towards the election. So manic are they indeed that you don't even have a proper host this week. You're once again stuck with me, Chris Finn, the producer of this show, stepping in because our regular hosts have all been called away to much more important and exciting things, if you can imagine such a thing. But I have managed to rustle up a brace of our political experts from across the DC Thompson portfolio. We have the Press and Journal's political editor, Andy Phillip, and we have the political reporter of the Evening Express, Adele Marison. Good morning, both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, not good morning.
Well, in fairness, that's my fault for saying good morning.
Oh, did you say good morning?
We were supposed to record this morning and then everything went all a little bit pear-shaped. So we're actually recording this in the afternoon. But let's get a bit of a sense from both of you really about where we're at with the election. I think, Andy, why don't we start with you? I sound very excited just now, but are you as excited as the nation is about what's coming up? Is this an exciting election or are you a little bit flat?
Well, I am always excited about elections, but it is fair to say that this one has not been really grabbing the attention, I don't think, because I think, well, firstly, we've just had a year's pandemic and lockdown and everyone's just looking at where the restrictions are being eased and at the sunshine and how to get out of the house. But there's also the fact that the SNP are still in the lead. It's a kind of fight between a fight for second place, and we've got the manifestos but no glitzy big kind of launches. Everything's done by Zoom call, and yeah, so it's hard to really get a bit of energy into it, I think, this time round. Yesterday was the turn of Labour to set out its stall, and in the last of the main parties to put out its manifestos. So we've kind of gone around all the houses now and we can all just look to May the 6th.
Fab. Well, we'll dig into those manifestos in a moment because, as you see, that's now everyone set out their stall. But just about that point you made about the race for second place, I want to take a little bit of a look back because it's been a fascinating journey. The question of independence, support for independence in Scotland has been over the last year, or the last 18 months, because we had seen a huge and apparently unstoppable move towards support for independence. In poll after poll after poll after poll, we saw the needle moving more and more towards support for yes, for Scottish independence. But in the last couple of weeks, 3-4 weeks, as the rubber meets the road, that support has certainly softened. And there was talk for a while, wasn't there, about a comfortable majority. Well, not comfortable majority, but definitely a majority in Holyrood for the SNP, for the Scottish National Party. But we've seen that talk get a little bit less bombastic of recent weeks. Mm-hmm. What's that been like for you to watch? And what do you think we're currently heading towards?
Well, one of the polls yesterday suggested that the SNP would end up pretty much where it is, with the same number of seats, short of a majority, reliant on the Greens. The tussle for second place will end with the Conservatives still in second place, with Labour a little bit behind. Nothing much changes. And for seasoned election watchers, it reminds me a little bit of the general election where there was a lot of excitement about the Lib Dems. And then we had an exit poll on the night which showed absolutely no change. Labour had the exact same number of seats as they did when they started in Scotland, and the Lib Dems were slipping right down again. So I guess the fear is that we'll end up with nothing really settled. So all the arguments people are having about the constitution, for example, well, unionists will say, well, the SNP don't have a majority, or there isn't that elusive supermajority. But, you know, with polls still split halfway and with the SNP still in power, then, you know, is anything settled? Can we actually move on? Will anything really change domestically as well? That's the concern, really. We've had all this upheaval, and will anything happen at the end of it?
It's the devil's ratio, isn't it? That 48-52% thing. Mm-hmm. So, but you mentioned, Andy, the manifestos now being fully laid out for the Scottish people to look at and decide between. I know you've been covering particularly in conversation with Nassar War, the Labour one, and we also had Alaba setting out their stall earlier in the week. Give us a sense of what those manifestos said and about what they might do to, you know, move the debate forward, the national conversation forward about our next elected government.
I was looking at the Scottish Labour manifesto yesterday, and I was reminded, it reminded me of the SNP one, not in terms of its overall content, but in terms of what it was saying about income tax, because both the parties had a lot to say about more social security, more pay for carers, for things like that. Really looking at expensive items. The SNP are not inclined to make any changes to the taxes, rates and bans, and Scottish Labour don't really want to make any changes either. And if they did, if they had to in the next parliament, it would only be at the very top, which is fine, but it's not, you know, it wasn't spelled out explicitly. We're going to raise tax on more of the wealthier earners to pay for what has been a catastrophic year in terms of the economy, not just the health service. So lots of big plans, but people still asking, how on earth do you pay for all of this?
Which is a question that has been put to the SNP as well, because their spending plans were quite bold and robust. But again, no, in fact, by some estimates, actually a tax cut in effect from their policies. But let's move from the sidestep from SNP to Alaba, obviously, a very pro-independence party. They set out their manifesto this week. Was there, frankly, Andy, anything in that manifesto apart from independence?
No, not really. there was... Alex Salmond said, you know, this shows we're not just a single issue party, but really, that's what they are for. They are, as he, you know, prefaced the whole thing, they're going to add urgency to quitting the UK. You know, he's previously called the Greens as weak as dishwater on independence. He warned about the SNP backsliding. You know, the manifesto is chock full of independence and exactly how they reckon they would do it, including encouraging peaceful demonstration, direct action, no less. They'd already measured out the curtains for the old Royal High School in Edinburgh, where they want to have a get together. With all parliamentarians from Scotland and citizens' assemblies and all sorts. Meanwhile, further down the list, you know, once you've got past a new separate currency, a central bank, and how we'd get into Europe, the promise that they would reform our entire tax system. So, you know, apart from some promises about raising the educational maintenance allowance and letting under-18s into gyms for free, and building houses, it was scant on domestic policy and big on ending the UK.
Well, I guess that perhaps doesn't come as any surprise. And something else that comes as not much surprise was the result of an interview between the editor of the Courier, David Clegg, and Douglas Ross, leader of the Scottish Conservatives. David's been doing interviews with all the political leaders in Scotland, and you can watch those videos on the Press and Journal and the Courier websites. But Adele, he was pressed, Douglas Ross, particularly on when would be an appropriate time to hold a referendum, and he wasn't having any of that, was he?
No, he was quizzed repeatedly by David Clegg on, you know, what would be the right circumstances to have an independence referendum, and just kind of answered with his thoughts on his personal thoughts on an independence referendum, which is obviously, I think we all know by now, he doesn't want one. So he basically didn't set out any kind of circumstances with which he thinks it would be acceptable. He was asked, you know, as a Democrat, what would those circumstances be? And he just kind of said, well, I see the independence referendum as a negative thing. And that was all he really said in response to that.
It's one of those awkward things, isn't it, that people who are not politics wonks, who are not following this all the time, regular folks, find that sort of thing so difficult to watch, don't they? We saw Douglas Ross again on Channel 4 News doing pretty much the same thing, being asked repeatedly, what is the democratic route towards a referendum? And Douglas Ross answering, just saying, you know, I don't want a referendum. And that's obviously the talking point, right? That's obviously the line that he and the special advisors have come up with, is you just don't give it house room, don't even set out a stall by which this conversation could happen. But it's frustrating to watch, isn't it?
Yes, I think in the Scottish Labour race for who would be leader. We had Monica Lennon, who took a different tact from Anna Sarwar. Anna Sarwar, you know, similarly to Mr. Ross, just does not want a referendum to happen, whereas Monica Lennon went along the lines of her saying that she personally did not want a referendum, but she, I guess, felt she was a Democrat, and if there were certain conditions met, that a referendum should happen. So I think people will be frustrated that, obviously, as you say, they're going along the lines of they don't want to concede any real ground. They just want to be like resolute and it's a no, it's a no, it's a no, you're not getting it. When really, I think voters may take them a bit more seriously if they kind of outlined what circumstances the question could at least be considered, and then they could fight their corner and fight their argument again, you know.
And it's an odd position for the Conservatives even to hold, isn't it? This is the party traditionally of law and order and process and, you know, the machinery of good society. It's odd that we've got such a toxic subject for them, the idea of independence, that they can't even concede that they would hold a democratic process to answer that question. But there was more in the conversation with David than just independence, and indeed more in the Conservative manifesto that we saw this week from the Conservatives as well. Adele, what in particular drew your attention from what they set out on Monday of this week?
So on Monday they had their launch. They've been sort of like all the other parties, trailing bits and pieces in the run up to that. But the big one on Monday was their plans around income tax as well. They're saying that they would cut income tax for the highest earners, which their opponents called the Ross rebate, because Mr. Ross's salary is, I think, in the region of around 64,000. Though he has come out since and said that he would, you know, personally forgo any cut to his tax bill. But the IFS, Institute for Fiscal Studies, they have been sort of commenting on the various manifestos, and they said that these proposals, these income tax proposals, would actually lead to cuts to other public services. So that was kind of what dominated on Monday. In terms of David Clegg and Mr. Ross's conversation, I mentioned that again in the interview, I found it very interesting. What has kind of been dominating the headlines for him is, you know, this question of whether or not Boris Johnson is actually going to make a visit to Scotland. It keeps coming up. I've been in several press conferences now. I think it comes up every single time, and it sounds like he just isn't coming, basically. He keeps saying that this is because of the coronavirus pandemic, but we all remember that he came up in very late January when the pandemic was more out of control, significantly more out of control. And so I guess that argument doesn't really hold. But I found it interesting, the little revelation in the David Clegg interview where Mr. Douglas Ross said that he and Boris Johnson text semi-regularly. I don't know, I just found that, you know, not regularly, just semi-regularly. It was kind of quite funny.
You don't know her, she goes to a different school. Yeah, that kind of feel to it.
So there's obviously speculation that that's around Boris Johnson's poor kind of popularity ratings in Scotland, and that they're deliberately trying to keep him away. But Douglas Ross just kept kind of repeating the same line that Boris Johnson is busy overseeing the vaccine rollout, and that it's nothing to do with that kind of thing. But everyone can draw their own conclusions, I guess.
Yes, and indeed, and we encourage you to go and watch those interviews on the Courier and the Press and Journal websites, because they are very revealing, and there's more to come from them. Right now, though, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back after this.
Get the facts and analysis you need about the things that matter to you this Holyrood election with DC Thompson Media. Our groundbreaking data research, video bulletins, independent opinion and expert reporting from our dedicated politics team is now yours, free for 30 days. That's right, 30 days of free, unlimited web access to The Courier or The Press and Journal to help you make an informed decision this May. New customers only, you can cancel at any time. Sign up at thecourier.co.uk/subscribe or pressandjournal.co.uk/subscribe, or follow the links in the episode notes to be better briefed.
So we've been talking about manifestos, but of course for a lot of people in Scotland, or indeed in any democratic or indeed non-democratic nation across the world, we don't every one of us sit down and, you know, painstakingly download these manifestos and go through the many pages that make them up, even for the shorter ones. And so for a lot of us, the only kind of engagement we have with political literature is in the little leaflets that come through our doors. And my doormat is certainly full of them. Andy, have you been seeing leaflets arriving through your door as well?
Yes. Not many people actually come into the door to put them in, I've noticed. You just hear the sort of light flutter, and then there they are, as they were. Yesterday, when there were three very similar ones arrived, I've had all the main parties a good few times already. And I saw the smaller parties had a go yesterday. So the problem we have with them is that you tend to just pick them up, have a glance, and then they go straight towards the recycling bin in most cases, I think. But this one had three very similar blue kind of coloured ones, one from the Reform Party, which is essentially the rebadged Brexit Party, another from the Scottish Family Party, who have some eyebrow-raising ideas, and then a third one, which is the one that actually caught my eye, which was headlined "Important News for Septic Tank Owners," which I thought sounded like a really interesting way to try and get my vote. And until I realised it really was just for septic tank owners. And here's the Reform Party. They want to drain the swamp. Is this just another kind of? Is this another way?
I bet you spent more time reading that one than the other ones.
I did. And then as a wee test, I laid the three out on the table and I asked my kids to pick their favourite, and they both went for the septic tank. And we don't even have a septic tank. So that just goes to show you.
I mean, quite what it goes to show you, I'm not sure, but it definitely does, as you say, Andy, go to show you. But I mean, to your point, you said these things tend to head quite quickly to the recycling bin, which is a damning indictment, isn't it? I mean, we should be more, and I know you're just, you know, that you're being glib, you're being charming for the sake of it, but you know, it's true that we tend, I think, perhaps not to engage with this as much as we really should. And you know, here's an A5 full color double-sided thing summary that comes through your door. You probably should spend much more time on it. Adele, you cover politics in your day job, but as a citizen you have a vote as well. Do you spend time engaging with the literature that comes through your door?
No, I can't say I do. I live in a sort of, I guess, a tenement block, and we've got a kind of like a basket, I guess you call it, under the letterbox. And so there's just, because there's six flats, there's just an absolute gigantic pile. So anecdotally speaking, I don't think my neighbours are really engaging with it either, which begs the question whether it's still a good tactic or whether they should be trying other means of communication.
And I don't mean to, the activists are going out and they're doing what they can, trying to get people to vote when they can't do any sort of big public things, and they're desperately trying to reach people. But it's true. I mean, I was speaking to just folk, you know, out and about, and they ask, well, oh, I should do some reading up on who to vote for. But they've probably had and discarded a whole ton of bits of paper at that point. So, well, if you know, where are you going to go and then get your information? Do they just, you know, talk to people on the Facebook group? Do they go and read the paper? What do they do if it's not going to be the leaflets that get to them?
It does beg the question, doesn't it? And I apologise for using that phrase. I know it gets people's hackles up, and quite right too, but it does beg the question about how we do, how political parties can reach people to talk to them about things that are important. Because, of course, we're still living in a post Donald Trump world. Obviously, it's not in any real sense post, but of course, if you look at the way that election material was disseminated through social media, particularly through Facebook, for Brexit and for the election of Donald Trump, not that I'm necessarily conflating those two things, but we know from Cambridge Analytica and similar revelations that information can be highly, highly targeted and invisible to everybody else. You know, if somebody sticks a leaflet through your door with, as you said, Andy, eyebrow-raising policies in it, at least everybody can see that. But because of the way that the Facebook advertising algorithms work, I've got no idea what ads you two have seen on Facebook, and you could have been identified and targeted in a completely different way to the way that I have been. And there's definitely something to be said, isn't there, for the, you know, old analog ways of doing things. But I wonder what both of you, do you think is the most effective way that politicians can reach people? I know we have the Leaders debate coming up on telly soon. We've talked before on this podcast about how effective or otherwise leaders debates can be, but away from tribalism in politics where people just, you know, will vote for whoever they vote for. Adele, what do you think is the most effective way for politicians to set out their stall and to explain why they're worthy of people's votes?
I think that's a really difficult question, because I guess that's what all the parties are trying to still figure out. And they are trying, you know, a range of different things. And this year's unique in that we're not meeting in public spaces in the same way. You know, you're not having, like, I'm working on a piece for next week about how engaged people are in this kind of election. Have they become more engaged as a result of the last year or anything? And that will be published next week. But just in little preview, I spoke to Kezia Dugdale, former Scottish Labour leader, who's now director of the John Smith Centre, who do a lot of research in politics and sort of increasing civility in politics and things. And she was just kind of along the lines of what you were saying there about Twitter. You know, I think Twitter's and social media started out as such a good, and in many ways still is, a really good way of reaching people that you haven't been able to reach before, potentially, and everyone gets a voice and everyone can ask questions of their elected representatives. But at the same time, you know, there's worrying things happening in terms of algorithms, where I think Kezia was saying that we are most likely to see either a kind of echo chamber effect. We see people that we agree with, and, you know, you just kind of see the same, a bubble of views, and you don't get confronted by sort of opposing views, or the opposite. We're seeing stuff we really violently sort of disagree with. And so it leads to this sort of, tribal, I guess, and not particularly pleasant way of doing politics online that she said particularly turns off certain groups of people, particularly women, is one. They don't therefore engage. So I don't know how, it's a kind of a balance there. I think in some ways social media is a good way of reaching people, and in other ways it maybe kind of highlights some of the worst aspects of politics as well. So I don't know the answer, really.
How dare you not know the answer? Some of my best friends are, insert name of opposition political party to my political views here. Andy, I'm going to ask the same question to you, really. I guess, particularly in the context of the SNP, we've seen Nicola Sturgeon in particular, obviously a very charismatic political figure, being criticised for getting so much airtime in such a positive light. Obviously, nobody says that the global pandemic is a good thing, but she always polls very well on whether she's a leader who is doing the right things for her country. That's a freebie for somebody like her, but what, in listening to even to Adele's answer, do you think is the best way for politicians to engage with people and show their true colours and help attract support for them and their party?
Well, a lot of these ways of looking at it are to do with politicians seeking completely unfiltered access to the public, and, you know, they'll try all sorts of different ways, and that's fine. But I mean, that's where we come in, I suppose, because if the party has any chance of being actually held to account, then, you know, it's not helpful to just have them washing around in Twitter and Facebook, where, you know, all sorts of claims can be left untested. And the best thing really is where we are able to actually give them the space to air their views in their manifestos and at launches, and then test them in the Q&As and actually look at how their policies are going to affect people, what they mean in comparison to the other parties. You know, we do that. And, you know, I would say that, wouldn't I? But that's where the traditional role of a good newspaper and a decent journalist come in. And so they could post as many flyers through the door as they want, but people will still look for and still need that kind of rigorous investigation by the media.
And that was a point made ably and in a very articulate way by David Clegg and Frank O'Donnell in the Stooshies Election Manifesto special, where those two editors of the Courier and the Press and Journal set out their stall for how we will be covering the election campaign. And the one of the points that Frank made in that that really resonated with me as producer, and I was sitting listening to the conversation as they were chatting, was that because DC Thompson Media has spent so much time and money doing surveys of people in the areas and the communities that we serve, we know the issues that are important. And so that will be the focus for the Press and Journal, the Courier, Evening Express, Evening Telegraph and Sunday Post in the election campaign. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep holding them to account and raising the issues that we know are important to our communities. Anyway, that's enough for now. Thank you so much to Andy, Philip and to Adele Merson for their time today. Thank you for listening. Please do follow the podcast wherever you get it, at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or indeed any other competing podcast platform. Thank you so much once again. We'll see you next time.
The Stooshy is the politics podcast from DC Thompson Media, bringing together political journalists and commentators from all over the country so that you can be better briefed. Teams at The Courier, The Press and Journal, The Evening Telegraph, Evening Express and The Sunday Post work hard day and night, online, in print and beyond, to bring you careful reporting and analysis designed to help you understand the implications of what happens in Holyrood, in Westminster and in our communities. So you don't miss an episode, follow The Stooshy today on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you know folk like you who want to understand politics in Scotland a little better, suggest they tune into The Stooshy or follow Stooshy Scott on Twitter and Facebook. You can get a free month of unlimited access to The Courier or The Press and Journal too. Just go to thecourier.co.uk/subscribe or pressandjournal.co.uk/subscribe. Or follow the links in the episode notes to be better briefed. Check the episode notes for details and terms.